Right. Hello. So today I'm going to focus on one of the sections that remain in the handout that I gave you last time. And that's really all I'm going to say specifically about the rest of chapter 8. And this is fortunately relatively self-contained, and it's extremely good practice with the definitions, A, and B, it really, I think, gives a good sense for the motivation for using modular symbols, especially for theoretical applications related to special values of L functions. So we'll focus specifically on the one piece of paper I just handed out, which has all the notes for today. Also, if you look at the back of the one piece of paper I handed out, there is a list of four exercises. Those are the exercises that will be due on Wednesday. So hopefully that's clear. So what I'll talk about specifically is a pairing between modular symbols and modular fields. So the pairing is very easy to define, but to see that it has any interesting properties takes more work. The work is mainly just using definitions and calculus, as you will see. So first, in order to define the pairing in the most natural manner, and by the way, this stuff's defined for everything I'll do makes sense today, at least for a finite index subgroup of SL2Z, but for our purposes, the subgroup will be gamma 1 of n or gamma 0 of n. And after fixing that, consider SK bar. This will just be useful and some things I'll state later. This is the space of anti-holomorphic cusp forms. And it's defined as follows. You just take the complex conjugates of all the elements of the space of cusp forms of weight k for gamma, where by the complex conjugate of a holomorphic function, I mean the function that sends z to the complex conjugate of f of z. And that is not a holomorphic function in general. For example, complex conjugation is not a holomorphic function. So this, even if you apply this to the identity map and the complex numbers to itself, you get something that's not holomorphic anymore. It's anti-holomorphic. And you look like you're dying to make a comment.
Yeah,
please do.
Never
holomorphic
unless it's a constant.
Okay, great. The only, I guess, this has intersection only if k were 0 and these were the constants. So, these will be useful in a moment, as you'll see. So in a moment, meaning right now, I'll define a pairing for you between modular forms and modular symbols. So here it is. So consider the direct sum of holomorphic and anti-holomorphic cusp forms, which, because this intersection is zero, you can just think of this as a set of functions. And that pairs naturally the following way with modular symbols of weight k for the same group gamma, and the pairing goes into the complex numbers, and the pairing is the following. Given an element f1, f2 in the sum, which we could also, I suppose, write as f1 plus f2 if you wanted,
and a modular symbol. First, I'll just define the pairing.
We became modular symbols of the form P alpha beta, but it extends by linearity to everything. So these two things pair to the following specific complex number. The integral from alpha to beta of f1 of z p z1 dz plus the integral from alpha to beta of f2 of z p z bar 1 dz bar. And this is a specific complex number. And this is a complex line integral, and it's an anti-complex line integral. So if you don't know what this means, here alpha and beta are two elements of P1 of Q. You choose a nice simple path from one to the other, oriented this way. You explicitly parameterize it as a function of t. And then here, this function of t, you can view it as some function, the real part, plus I times the imaginary part of the function. And you just replace z by what you have here, use the standard, just expand this a little bit, and then you get a sum of a real integral plus I times another real integral, and that defines this complex line integral. And a basic fact from complex analysis is that if you chose a slightly different path, you wouldn't get a different answer. Because f is a holomorphic function, and p of z1, well, p is a polynomial, and if you replace x by z and y by 1, you have a polynomial in z, that's also holomorphic. So this product is holomorphic. So the complex number you get here doesn't depend on the choice of alpha, and I mean doesn't depend on the path that you choose from alpha to beta. Okay, so that's the definition. Now there are, of course, some issues here with this definition. For example, what if you change your modular symbol to something that's equivalent, another representative for the same modular symbol? Remember, mk gamma is by definition m, the modular symbols of weight 2, but before pushing out by gamma, tensored with zk minus 2 of xy, homogeneous polynomials of degree 2, modulo a whole bunch of relations, namely gamma x minus x, with gamma in a group capital gamma and x in here. In modern torsion. So, in particular, if you have a modular symbol, for example, P alpha beta, and you hit it on the left, by an element of the group capital gamma, then if you were to expand this all out, you get some other modular symbol, G of P, comma, G of alpha, G of beta. And that might look, you know, that's a completely different looking thing. You'd get a potentially, well, you get a different integral, but would the number be different when you compute the integral? And the answer is no, because this is well-defined. But why is it well-defined? So, I mean, I have to argue that it is well-defined, but this is well-defined. Here, there's no real issue. You don't have different ways of representing a holomorphic function up on the upper half. But at least here, there's some issue of well-definedness, given that there are different ways of representing elements of mk gamma, and I've given this definition by saying, given an element here, given by a specific representative, then you define an integral like this. So now let me explain why it's well-defined, at least in the case when k equals 2. I left the case of k bigger than 2 as an exercise. So, first proposition, this pairing is well-defined. I'll give the proof for k equals 2. So
In the case of k equals 2, also I will just assume that f2 is 0 for simplicity.
Once you see this, you'll get a sense of what's relevant to it, to the well-definedness of this plane. Okay? So, here's what you do. I'll write it over here. So we have a modular form F in S2 gamma, and we have a modular symbol alpha beta in M2 capital gamma. And I didn't say this, but by the way, you extend linearly. So if you have a sum of modular symbols, then you pair on each one, and then you add the results together. Okay, so you have these two. And let's suppose you have a G in gamma. Then we need to check, is that the pairing of F and alpha beta is equal to the pairing of F with G alpha beta. Or at least that's one crucial input to this. Well, there are a few other well-definedness issues. For example, in order for this to be well-defined, you need that 0 pairs to F and gives you 0. So an example of something that is 0 over here is alpha beta plus beta gamma plus gamma alpha. So alpha beta plus beta gamma plus gamma alpha. You know that that's 0. That's one of the relations that you have in M2. So it better be the case that when you pair a modular form, a holomorphic function on the upper half-plane, with the path from alpha to beta, to beta to gamma, and then back to alpha, that you get 0. But again, it's a holomorphic function. You're integrating along a path that doesn't have, for which the function doesn't have any poles inside, and therefore, in fact, the integral is 0 for complex analysis. Okay, so back to this. So I'm really only checking one part of well-definedness, but I've already just explained the other part. So let's check this, and this is kind of interesting. I'll write the definition on each side. Integral from alpha to beta, f of z, dz. You don't have to worry about the polynomial part over there, because the weight is 2. So the polynomials are just up there. And over here you have an integral the action here is the action each factor, so it's from g of alpha to g of beta, f of z dz. So the question is, are these two equal? And if they are, then that means that the whole modular symbols formulation with this integration term is a really good choice because, you have this formal combinatorial construction and it pairs with this other thing, and so at least having a pairing means you'll be able to recover information from the right-hand side about the left-hand side. So now you just think about calculus. So if you're teaching, for example, second semester calculus, you might have done a lot with integration and change of variables. And here you can do the change of variables. Z equals, U equals G of Z. So you just do that, and you get integral from alpha to beta, f of u, so how do I want to write this? F of g inverse of u, d, I want to write it like that. But I guess I could. How about, Zg is an invertible function, so I can also just write z equals g of u. Okay, then this is equal to the integral from, so when you do the change of variables, you apply the, you have to put here the thing that you would plug in there
so that you get this. So it's alpha to beta, and it's f of g of u, d g of u.
Okay, so that's calculus. And now, if you think back to pretty much the very first week of this class,
you'll remember the definition of a modular form.
And there are a couple of equivalent ways to think about it, but one of them was that for any G in the group that your modular form is a form for, and this G right now is in gamma, and this F is a modular form for gamma, that F of G of U dG of U is equal to F of U dU. The condition to be a modular form is exactly that the differential F of Z dZ is invariant under all the linear fractional transformations that are given.
So this is equal to the integral from alpha to beta F of U dU.
And that number is exactly the same as this number. So these are equal. So these are equal. So in fact, the pairing is well defined. So the combinatorial construction of M2
is compatible with this pairing that I wrote down.
And I only did this for weight 2, but it's very similar for weight greater than 2. So I'll just leave that off. Okay, any questions?
So the minute is for the second half.
It's just, it's just everything's at table. But no, there's, I don't think there's any difficulty. I mean, you might have to complex conjugate your entire complex analysis class, but it's okay. And I mean, I'm making a big deal about the second factor, but really, it's not that necessary.
Just take conjugates of everything. You back your version of the first factor.
Yeah, yeah. There's no new information there at all. It's boring. And the issue is that you have, let's see. Basically, if you want to have a non-degenerate pairing between modular symbols and modular forms, you need the extra anti-holomorphic ones. If you tensor your modular forms up to C. I mean, if you tensor your modular symbols up to C. So, one of the big results is that you take SK gamma direct sum S bar, K gamma direct sum the Eisenstein series, EK gamma, and then pair that with NK gamma C. This just means you take modular symbols and then you do everything over the complex numbers instead of over the integers. And then you have a perfect pairing. Perfect pairing. Except, I lied, sorry. It's, I just completely lied. It's not a perfect pairing, it's... So, you have to take cuspidal modular symbols, which I haven't defined yet, unfortunately. But then you get a perfect pairing. I define cuspidal modular symbols in the weight 2 case as the kernel of the map to the free abelian group on the cusps, and there's a similar definition in the higher weight case, which is in the notes. But so you have a perfect pairing like this. Okay, so that's the first thing, that modular symbols and modular forms are related in this very nice way via this explicit pairing. And now that allows me to tell you about how L functions of modular forms are related to modular symbols. And really this, yes, please.
not just one system. You need the fact that you have customer
to define the pairing?
Yeah.
Let me think about that for a second. There could be some issue of convergence, but I don't think there is. Let me think. I think there can be an issue of convergence. Like what? That converges. I think you have a simple, you have a problem with convergence if you allow Eisenstein series.
Yes, you need the exponential decay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You need to. Also, just think about the more general case, these modular forms, they're not defined at the cusps, really. I mean, they sort of behave really, really badly, in that if you go to a cusp that's near it, then you might get a completely different value when you evaluate the modular form there. And if it's cusp form, that's not an issue, because it's zero at all the cusps. But for an Eisenstein series, or a non-cuspidal modular form, at some cusp it might be non-zero. And then very, very, very close to that, it will be some completely different value. So basically, if you try to define this integration pairing on an Eisenstein series, it just doesn't work. You end up getting something that doesn't converge. I think another way to think of it is the differential f of z dz has a simple pull, for example, at infinity, and you can't integrate it because you have a pull. In the case when f is an Eisenstein series, for example, like E2. Okay, does that answer your question? Okay, so you have to restrict to cusp forms. But that's not a really serious issue if you're trying to get at or understand modular forms, because Eisenstein series are relatively easy as compared to cusp forms. All right, now I'm going to tell you something that I think is excellent motivation for this whole course and for modular symbols, which is the definition of the L function attached to a modular form, the right definition, not a cheap definition. And second, I'll prove to you that you can get special values of L functions of modular forms at integer points, which are the ones that are very interesting from the point of view of the Bergen-Sorrentin-Dyer or Bloch-Kato conjecture using this pairing. Okay? So in the notes, this is right at the top of the second page, page 132. But here's the nice definition of L function. So again, let's assume that f is in the dump. I don't know whether f has to be a cusp form to find the L function. I don't think it does. But I will definitely assume it's a cusp form. I'm not assuming it's an eigenvector rank operators or anything here. Then the L function of f at the point s is defined by the following formula, which is called the, the inverse Millin transform or the Millin transform of the function f. I don't know if you remember. It's one or the other, right? Yeah, so. But anyways, it's very, very explicit. Alright, so there you are. The L function of f evaluated at point s is 2 pi to the power of that number. The gamma function inverse at s. This doesn't define the L function everywhere, but it's gamma of s inverse, integral from 0 to infinity, f of it, t to the s, dt over t. And one of the first things you do if you see this formula is you go, wait, well, f has a Fourier extension at infinity, at least if you know, it's gamma 1 of n. So you can write f equal to sum n equals 1 to infinity a n q to the n. And then there should be some relationship between that and this. After all, you could just plug in it here, q is e to the 2 pi iz. So you could just put this in, and then you have this infinite sum that you're integrating, and you could, assuming sufficiently good convergence, switch the order of integration and summation. And then you end up with this big sum, an integral from 0 to infinity, e to the 2 pi pi, and actually we cancel it, is it 2 pi tn, t to the s dt over t. Right? And in fact, you do have the convergence needed to switch the order of integration and summation here. So there's a standard bound on the size of Fourier coefficients of modular forms that you'll find in an ebook on modular forms. So, my book, any standard like, theoretical reference. So, this is justified by, this is valid. This is valid. And all I've done here, unless I've made a mistake in copying from one line to the next, is I've taken the Fourier expansion that f has and simply substituted in here and switched the order of summation to integration. Just checking if I made any stupid mistakes. I don't think I did. Notice, by the way, that these as n gets large, these numbers are pretty small. So in fact, this gives a method to compute LFS if you can compute these integrals. But via integrating by parts, you actually find that this is a pretty explicit thing.
Or just a substitution, actually.
Oh, tell me.
Just substitute, say, tau is 2 pi tn.
Tau is 2 pi tn. Yes?
Then. Then this is going to turn into the standard gamma.
Standard what?
The standard integral for the gamma function, basically.
Ah, okay. And then?
With an extra factor of 2 pi n to s.
Right, that's true. That's true. But how do you relate that to the gamma function?
We'll just need to define the integral.
Okay. Sure, and then you have the gamma function here, so it cancels. Well, let me tell you what you get without further ado. So you get a very nice simple sum a n over n to the s. In other words, if you put the 2 pi and the gamma to the minus s back over here, and then just consider this integral. So 2 pi ds gamma of s inverse integral from 0 to infinity. And I'll do your substitution. Tau is e to the 2 pi tn, so 0 is still 0, infinity is still infinity. So e to the minus tau. And there's some extra 2 pi's and stuff. So 2 to the s minus 1. And I'm worried about thinking on my feet. So t is 1 over 2 pi n tau. So 1 over 2 pi n
to the S, tau to the S minus 1 D. And there's going to be another, actually, I'll just put it like that, tau to the S, and then dt over t is the same as d tau over tau. It's a constant function. Tau over tau. Okay, so this whole thing is equal, I claim, to 1 over n to the s, which is not too surprising because the fact that does factor out. You're integrating with respect to t. The 2 pi to the s cancels with the 1 over 2 pi to the s. We have a 1 over n to the s. We have 1 over n to the s. Gamma of s inverse integral from 0 to infinity e to the minus tau to the s minus 1 d tau. And that better be the gamma function at s. And it is. Excellent. So there's no integration by parts involved.
So simply delete that to my notes. Oh, I didn't actually see. Oh, wait, what happened? This is only for a real part of S sufficiently large.
Yes. I don't make any claims about this being true for all S.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, it's a theorem, which Hecke proved, that this function that I defined here for real part of S sufficiently large, which the definition is complicated in terms of an integral, as we just proved completely, it's the same as this sum, modulo the convergence issue. So it's actually not that bad. It converges for real part of, I mean, it converges everywhere. It doesn't converge everywhere, but it has an analytic continuation everywhere. So that's a German hacker.
LFS is entire. It can be extended to an entire function on the complex plane.
And my favorite exposition of that proof is in Knapp's book on elliptic curves. As a very nice, easy-to-read proof of analytic continuation of L functions in modular forms. I mean, there's many references, but that's my favorite.
So it wouldn't have a pole?
Nope, no poles. Unlike the Riemann zeta function, you don't have a pole at one. A famous example is take an elliptic curve, so k here is in 2, and then this is the L function of the elliptic curve, and the order of vanishing at 1 of this entire function is supposed to be the rank of the elliptic curve over q. Okay, so that's a connection, well, between at least integration and special values. The value of 1 is some integral here, but well, actually, that's not even true because, wait, hold on, let me think about that first. Better be true, so I'm about to use it. This should converge for s equal to 1.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's okay.
You know, we expect it to diverge for a real part of s, 0 or negative.
Uh-huh. This is bad even for s equal to 1, I think, but I think the integral is okay for it. More values of s, or at least for s equal to 1. It better be because I'm about to substitute s equal to 1 into it.
Well, your sum of a n converges, right? Because the alpha is a q expansion.
It's kind of unclear.
Well, if you look at the q expansion,
the sum of the yeah.
Right, isn't the
That's like taking a holomorphic function on the open unit disk, taking a power series for it, and then asking if it converges when you plug in a value on the closed disk. And
Yeah.
So I don't think you get that. Though the function that in this case that you define on the open unit disk is supposed to be zero on the entire boundary, or at least on the rational prints in the boundary. But I don't think you have that.
Yeah.
I think it is, in fact, the case. I don't mean this in the sense of proof, but I think it does converge at 1. But maybe not to the right thing, or just happens to converge. It certainly doesn't converge absolutely at 1. because that's the harmonic series. But
I'm not going to. I only have this formula for S with real part sufficiently large. I only claimed it for real part of S sufficiently large. This integration formula defines the L function. It's defined for more values of S. I mean, for chain dependence for S, I guess, bigger than zero.
Yeah, so I guess you have to stay bounded near zero on the curve we're integrating. We're integrating.
That's okay.
And for decay exponentially, we're vague.
Yeah, we have that. Okay, so now let me tell you, or now I'll tell you, the connection with L functions and modular symbols, the connection between modular symbols and L functions. Because I haven't explained that yet, but it's really, really nice. And here's how it works. It's just this one formula, 854, but it's a very important thing, and I'll prove it for you, even though it's not proven for this. So here's, I'll state it as a proposition. For 1 less than or equal to j, less than or equal to k minus 1 integers. So, by the way, this L function, if you throw in some extra gamma factors, basically to get rid of this, and also something involving the conductor at the end here, then it has, well, let me see. You have to assume something more. You need that f as an eigenvector for each of the Heck operators. But then this we need slightly less than that. But sorry for going back and forth. This will have, not in this generally, but for special f at least, this will have a functional equation. And that functional equation gives you a symmetry, and the critical strip, that is it's a symmetry about, I think, k over 2. So the critical strip for this function is between 0 and k. And the integers in there are the points at which you have really interesting conjectures about the special value of this function. So, for example, when k is 2, we just have one integer in here at 1, and that's a very interesting point for the function. But in general, you are very interested in the special value of f at all of these integer points. And here's the connection between these integers and modular symbols. It's very direct. LFJ is equal to, there's some minus 2 pi I the J divided by J minus 1 factorial times the integral of F with a special modular symbol, which I like to call a generalized winding element, following a paper of Mazur and Swinnerton-Dyer, which studies this specific modular symbol in great detail in the case of k equals 2. They wrote a whole paper about it. So there it is. If you pair f with this special modular symbol, namely the symbol from 0 to infinity times one of these, x to the I, y to the k minus 2 minus i's, then you get, up to some factor right here, you get LFJ. So let me prove this to you. So all we're going to do is substitute, we're going to do the change of variables t goes to it in the definition of the pairing, and this will pop out. We also, of course, have to use the definition of LFS. So we have to combine those two things. And somehow the polynomial part of the pairing that will correspond to this and so on. Okay, so we'll do the change of variables. Variables. replaced by IT. So, minus IT actually. So this is an invertible function and we're going to use it. So, and I'm going to apply it to this definition. By the way, I forgot to say what the infinity is here. This is an integral where t varies over real numbers from 0 to infinity along the real axis, along the positive real axis. So that's kind of relevant. And here, f of I t, you can view that as a real function plus I times an imaginary function. So the result of this integral is a single complex number. But that's what this is supposed to be. It's relevant because I'm about to do a change and I won't know what to put at the ends of the I won't know how I'm transforming that line. And it's a little annoying using minus I because suddenly I'm in the, Okay, so so let's do this change of variables in the formula for LFJ. So LFJ, well, first replace all the S's by J, a specific integer. And then we have gamma of J inverse, so J minus 1 factorial. That's where that J minus 1 factorial comes from. Then integral from 0 to now I infinity, or minus I infinity, but they're the same. F of t, as if you replace t by minus it here, you would get f of t, then minus it to the s, and then it's still dt over t, because when you differentiate that function, the minus it pops up and gets canceled by the minus it you put there. So this is true, and let's see, make sure I didn't leave any j's around. Right here. Thank you. Thank you very much. I have a j here. And notice that j, that you have a t to the j, that's going to match up with this right here. Actually, when these cancel, it's t to the j minus 1, so that will end up matching up with this. So it feels right. We're doing the right thing. That's okay, because that's hard. Okay, so now let's take this. Something that looks like the formula I gave over there, so I'll do a little rewriting to fit something like that. Here I factored out the minus I to the j right here. So you have minus 2 pi I to the j in the numerator. This is j minus 1 factorial. And then what we have left over is the integral from 0 to I infinity f of t to the j minus 1 dt. But that's exactly the same thing as this thing right here, just from the definition of the integration pairing. This is equal to the pairing of f with our, actually we call this e sub j, where e sub j is the modular symbol given here, multiplied by this extra factor. Let's do this j minus 1, y minus 2 minus. Alright, so k minus 2 minus j minus 1, minus 0 infinity. So if you have modular forms, the special values of those modular forms at, or at least those cuspidal modular forms at integer points, are exactly the same thing as the pairing of the modular form with these special modular symbols. And this observation can be used, for example, to give a nice proof that L of f, an integer point divided by a certain period, and some other auxiliary factors, is an algebraic integer, or even better, a rational number, or more precisely, a number whose that lies in the field generated by the algebraic coefficients of the modular form. So you can get this sort of result out. And you can also get explicit bounds on the denominator of this number. That's one of the things I did in my thesis with Anouette Caché. Okay, so I've defined a pairing here, which I've just erased it again. And it's well-defined between modular forms, cuspidal modular forms, and modular symbols. And it's relevant partly because it gives you special values of L functions. So a very, very special case of this proposition that I just proved is that if you have an elliptic curve, and this is really the place in which modular symbols started in this old paper of Birch, you have an elliptic curve E, and there's a corresponding modular form F sub E in S2 gamma 0 to N. And the special value of the L function of the elliptic curve at 1 is exactly the same as the special value of the corresponding modular form at 1. And this is equal to the pairing of the modular form with the special modular symbol 0 infinity up to some factor that involved the 2 pi I type stuff. So what you do is you study this pairing, and it gives you information about the special value. Surprising amount of information. So, another very natural way to look at this is that given a modular form F, say F sub E to be concrete, we have a map from modular symbols and 2 to the complex numbers, and the map sends a modular symbol, say alpha beta, to the complex number, which is this pairing, F E paired with this modular symbol. And for example, well, it's just a completely explicit map. The image of this map is a finitely generated subgroup of C, because M2 is finitely generated. An example image of an element under this map is 0 infinity. That element goes to 0 over here exactly when L of E1 equals 0. So that already gives you a feeling that there's some connection with, you have this map and it's connected. And M2 contains inside of it h lower 1 x 0 of n z, as I mentioned a long time ago. And this map from here over to the complex numbers, if you take the image of h1 x 0 of n z, then you get a lattice inside of C under this map coming from pairing, and C modulo that lattice is isomorphic to the elliptic curve. Interestingly. So that's sort of an aside. So but still, I'd have to explain a little bit about how you can view the elliptic curve as a quotient of x0 of n in order to completely explain to you why this mapping, which comes from pairing, is connected with the elliptic curve we started with. Okay, so if I have 2 minutes, let me summarize the other statements in here. One is that the pairing's non-degenerate when you restrict to cuspidal modular symbols. So if you pair only cusp, that's a little unfair. Can I go until the clock strikes 20 after, since that's what I've been planning. So if you restrict to cuspidal modular symbols, then you get a non-degenerate pairing. That's very, very important. Another result is that if you define an action of Hecke operators on cusp forms and on modular symbols, then the Sakharian respects the action of Hecke operators in the sense that P and F, P alpha beta, is equal to F paired with Pn applied to P alpha beta. And that's really, really important because it says that if you have a specific modular symbol that's an eigenvector for every Hecke operator, then you can recover from it, combined with this non-degeneracy result, the fact that there exists a specific modular form which has the same collection of eigenvalues. But also this is just generally very, very helpful for a lot of different things. Another way to think about it is that the induced map you get from modular symbols to something else is, well, the something else has a structure of a module over the Hecke algebra, like here, the elliptic curve is, that's a Hecke module homomorphism. So, but basically you have this. And I give a complete detailed proof of this in the notes, but it's very tedious. It takes a while to go through every step. But it's given, it takes about a page in here. Okay, so that's all I wanted to tell you about this pairing. And next week I'll start by talking about new forms and how to explicitly write down all the new forms of a given level in a compact manner. It's something that has taken me forever to figure out how to explain. You know, I've coded it a couple of times. But it's kind of nice, just some basic algebra. Okay, but the crucial thing is just, you have this pairing, here it is, Hecke equivariant, has other nice properties, etc. And it connects modular forms with modular symbols. And it convinces you that modular symbols are the right thing because they're combinatorial construction, but they also pair nicely with cusp forms. So even if, I mean, no matter what, they've got to be interesting. Okay, so I'll see you on Monday, unless I'm meeting with you in a few minutes. Are we meeting in a few minutes? I'm talking to you. Michael, I didn't see him here at all today. So.
Let's find him first.
Okay, sounds good.